The University of Detroit Mercy presents another encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor radio program. Today's show takes us back to February 2009.
The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show where you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Kathy Bush, and we're celebrating a little question and answer with our panel, and let me introduce them to you. From the Department of Criminal Justice and the head of our Intelligence Analysis Program, or INT as we call it, it's Professor Eric Barnes.
Hey, good to be here.
And glad to have you with us today.
Yeah.
And sitting next to Eric from the College of Engineering and Science, the director of its pre-college engineering program, and sporting a bright yellow Lego t-shirt
today is
Dan, the Lego Man Maggio.
Hi, Kathy.
Now, is that from the first
competition? Yeah, this was given to me by a team in Clarkston.
Wow.
They have a high school team. They're called Team Rush.
Team Rush.
If anybody from Team 27 is listening, hi, everybody. They know me.
All right.
And then they ran a summer camp for the Lego.
Oh,
that's outstanding.
I love
the
shirt.
When I saw the shirt, I said I need it.
Oh, yeah.
And you're right. You do. And
yes,
it's
you do.
Great.
So
that's the history behind. Even though I don't usually wear yellow, I made an extra.
It's good on you.
That's okay. It's very spring and very Easter. Yes,
it's very springy. That's what somebody said to me.
It is very,
very springy.
Maybe because here in Michigan we just experienced what we hope to be our last snowfall. I am still suffering from lack of cable because a big tree branch came down on my backyard and took out my cable. Yeah, they had to come. They've got to get the chainsaw crew to come
out.
Yeah, I'm pretty scared of that. But they're coming tomorrow, so that's good because I cannot miss any more sports.
Yeah.
If I had not had tickets to the final game for the playoffs and my cable was out, there would have been blood on the sand.
Wow.
It would have been very scary. So. And Roy Finkenbein should be joining us in a little bit. So, again, let me make the plug for questions because we have some great questions today. And we can answer things about Lego or intelligence or analysis or whatever you want to send us.
Fallen trees as well.
Fallen trees. But please keep those chainsaw questions to yourself, folks.
Didn't you have a problem with your power or your power in January?
It was in January, the power. But that was another ice storm.
You had bad luck.
Well, she
lives in Michigan.
I live in Michigan,
I mean, that's all it is.
What I hate is the fact that these were trees my dad planted,
when
he came back from Korea, Korean vet, plant the trees. And as much as I have them trimmed, the ice or that, and I hate to cut a tree down.
I agree.
They were great shade for the house, and I think, this is something that he and mom did before there were five screaming bush brats coming at him. So that's kind of it. So anyway.
Planted the trees before they planted the bushes.
That's exactly right. Indeed. It probably was easier to do.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
To honor an event that's going to be coming up between the Departments of History and the Departments of Chemistry and Biochemistry, we've got some trivia facts on two very important individuals born on the same day in the same year. And that would be Charles Darwin and Abraham Lincoln.
200 years.
200 years. So let's hear the science side of it.
Oh, the science side
of it? Yeah, let's hear the science side there, Matt.
Let's see. Well, there's a problem with the term natural selection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it anymore. I just don't, because it makes it sound like something or someone is selecting something, which isn't quite true.
No.
So I think that there's a lot of Darwin historians that are pretty excited about this anniversary, much like the historians, I'm sure. I've been excited about Lincoln, so we're going to do this little sort of quiz bowl between students and faculty on the two big greats. And if we're lucky, someone like John Schaefer will show up dressed like somebody. Maybe some sort of Lincoln-Darwin hybrid. I don't know.
Okay, that would be interesting to see. I would very much like that. And anyway, we'll start with our questions on Charles Darwin. Okay?
Bring it.
All right, bring it on. This is just a warm-up for next week.
From Screech to Charles Darwin.
Why not? Hey, it's a small world after all. Okay. What was the name of the scientist who was doing similar work to Darwin's but in New Guinea?
Wallace?
Yes, it's Alfred Wallace. In fact, they claim that he came up with a theory of evolution very similar to Darwin's.
Right. Whoever publishes first.
I was going to say, then Darwin beat him to the publication game. Yeah. And there were some other people that were at Cambridge, what's his name? Sedgwick was one of them. I can't think of the other guy that they had taught him at Cambridge and also had a number of different theories and ideas that way. I got interested in Darwin because of my old roommate. that she had to read The Origin of Species. And I just thought one day, like, okay. She worked for a guy named Father Paulinus Forstoffel, a Jesuit that used to teach here. Isn't that a great name?
Wow.
Father Paulinus Forstoffel, who dedicated years and years of work to looking at the limb development of chimeric mice.
Wow.
And in fact, it was really interesting because he did some work that was later adapted by people like the March of Dimes, people who were looking at birth disabilities. Yeah. And Sue ended up being his research assistant. And he said that she was vastly undereducated. And so he suggested that she start with some of the greats, he said, and just did you get a baseline knowledge of looking at genetics. And he gave her the book to read. And that's how I was like, oh, okay, this looks kind of interesting. And it did. It was really, to me, it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand half of what he was writing, but it was interesting. What disease did most people believe now that Charles Darwin had?
See, I was just writing these trivia questions for
Alzheimer's?
No, very sadly, it came because he was bitten by a certain bug.
Some syndrome?
It's Chagas syndrome,
Something. That's...
But yeah, sadly, his travels, and I'm sure at that time, first of all, it's before the development of antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that could be an issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that they probably would have even thought Lyme's disease was a disease. Lyme's. They probably just thought you were a lazy bounder.
Rickets or scurvy or something.
Yeah, something like that they could hook up with, you know.
Eat some oranges.
Eat some oranges.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Or I know that in teaching this Canadian history course this semester, the Micmacs had a different thing that they would brew pine needles.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was a way.
Drink the tea from that.
Right, like, and of course the French that came and settled, like at Saint Croix and the different places, the first French settlements thought, of course, they were barbarians. But while the French died of scurvy, Micmacs were out there trapping those beavers and doing what they needed to do. Mm-hmm. So. Never scoff at things that we don't know.
Kathy, having seen your syllabus for that course, I'm amused by the title of your supplementary book.
Why I Hate Canadians? Written by Will Ferguson. Yes. I really, because it talks about Canadian nationalism or national identity, and there are things that he hates about how people try to hyphenate themselves as Canadians that really, really disturbs him. Mm. So that's... Why I Hate Canadians. Okay. Charles had two famous grandfathers. On his mother's side, do you know who the famous grandfather was?
Wedgwood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Wedgwood. I just heard that on NPR the other day.
Yeah, they were famous for their wonderful pottery, especially that blue and green type pottery.
Mm-hmm.
But who was the well-known person on his father's side?
Darwin.
Good call.
I
know I knew this at one point, but
this—I think this had to be this question is odd because he had this. He had to be older than a grandfather, at least if this is a real claim. So this must be like a great great grandfather or something. Someone who is very famous for his book *In Praise of Folly*, usually known as *Blank of Rotterdam*. Mm.
Oh, Erasmus.
Erasmus, So that could have been his grandfather because Erasmus died like, no way.
There was an Erasmus Darwin, was there not?
Yeah. But I think,
maybe the question's confused.
Maybe that's
confusing.
It. Was Charles Darwin an atheist, yes or no?
Yes.
I'm saying no. I don't think that he was.
I would go with the no as
well.
I mean, first of all, he went to Christ Church, Cambridge, okay? And if you attended Oxford or Cambridge, you had to sign, the 39 Articles, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you couldn't go there. I would describe him more as an agnostic, I think, later, but not as an atheist.
He kind of went between believer and agnostic at different points in his life.
I mean, but he wasn't like a Huxley who,
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think different that way.
Some interesting stuff coming out. You've read about this new book that's claiming that his opposition to slavery is behind his desire to... The book just came out this year. His desire to show the common humanity.
I see.
Origin of all humanity.
Okay. I'd buy into that. Interesting. Did Darwin have any nicknames?
Yeah, Stumpy.
Chuck.
Stumpy.
Where did Stumpy come from?
I love it, though. Why not?
The bird man.
It's those undeveloped limbs.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, actually, many of his friends refer to him as Stultus. S-T-U-L-T-I-S.
And come on, Matt, explain it to us.
So I couldn't, I don't know what that means, mind you. Maybe
this must have something to do with the students who call me Grizz Brisky. What the heck, Stoltis?
Grizz Brisky.
Where did they come up with
that? That's what I'm saying.
They think you look like Grizzly Adams, and then they shortened it, or
because
of the beard. I grizzled beard.
Did they explain Stoltis?
No, they don't.
That is crazy.
That in letters that they noted that from received from, especially from university friends from Cambridge. They would write to him as Stoltis.
Sure. Usually Michael picks up on these cues.
But I'm sure Michael's find me the Geek Soundtrack Volume 1 and 2. Okay, just not there. Okay.
Grizz Brisky?
Yeah.
Hold on, I can't get past that one now.
I mean, we're going to want to know more during the break, okay? Why was Darwin invited to sail aboard the Beagle?
The cabin boy wasn't there.
That's a possibility.
Did he know the captain? Did he know who was commanding the vessel? Something like that?
It has something more to do with the university relationship, actually.
Hmm. They needed a doctor, didn't they? And they need someone.
I'm going to give that to you because he was a Cambridge professor. One of his professors was there and wanted a research assistant.
Okay.
You know, in the notion of probably you will do my grunt work for me there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Once we're on the boat, you can't, jump out and swim back.
That's it. So he was asked by this Cambridge prof to be his research assistant or something in that way. One of the following people wanted to dedicate one of their works to Charles Darwin, but Darwin told the author no. Was it Louis Pasteur, Karl Marx, Bernard Shaw, or Garibaldi, the Italian nationalist?
I say Karl Marx.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like Marx.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was.
Got that London connection.
Yes, was. And so, but Darwin said no, he didn't want the book dedicated to him.
He didn't want to be known in the 21st century as a commie and an atheist.
Yes, really. Does anybody know what book it was?
Communist Manifesto.
Yes. Yeah, it was the manifesto.
The big one.
The biggie. Yeah, okay. Is it true that the Galapagos tortoises, I love the friend in Ireland, used to call them the tortoises at Ballybunion. It was totally crack when she would say that. It's the tortoises down there. Is it true that the Galapagos tortoises spit salt water out of their mouths?
I'm going to have to say yes to that one.
No, they come out of a gland, don't they?
It's true. It's no. Yeah. There were iguanas that did that.
Yeah.
It was iguanas that could spit salt water. Yeah. Yeah. And he observed that, and he wrote it into his notebook that the salt water spitting iguanas did not want
these
them coming
on
shore.
These damn lizards.
Instead of that dark cat. Yeah, that's right. Okay, now some of our other questions are going to just deal with other Charleses, not just Darwin in that way. Who was Charles the Bald? Charles the Bald.
The founder of the Hair Club for Men.
He probably wishes he could claim that.
Was the French?
Yes, he was a French king. He was Charles II of France. That wasn't very nice to call him that.
Didn't they wear wigs anyway?
Really, the follicle challenge would have been much better.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's
PC.
Okay. What do these people have in common? Bach, Darwin, Franklin D. Roosevelt, and Einstein.
They're all left-handed?
No.
I have no idea.
Hold on.
They all married somebody that shares a characteristic.
Same name of their spouses?
No.
Second cousins?
A woman. Right.
Cousins.
I'll just go with
cousins.
Because Eleanor was fifth cousin, right?
Oh,
she was fifth cousin.
Jerry Lee Lewis in there.
No, because
Jerry Lee Lewis would have gave it away.
She married their second cousins?
No, Eleanor Roosevelt's father was the brother of Theodore Roosevelt, but they came from the Johannes line of the Roosevelts. What was Charles Lindbergh's nickname?
Lindy.
Lucky?
Well, there's Lucky Lindy, but he had another name before he became famous.
Wait, I'll do it.
Stoltis?
Stoltis Lindbergh. That's the way he signed into hotels.
Yeah. No. He did, we now know, have a secret marriage and children, not just with Anne Morrow Lindbergh. His pre-trip to Paris nickname was Slim, and then after that he was always referred to.
That makes more sense.
Because
he was Slim.
Very
Stumpy,
bony,
frankly,
tall.
Also
yeah,
will
Stumpy.
Work.
But yeah, his post-names became everything from Lucky Lindy to whatever. What was his son's nickname? This is sadly the son that was kidnapped.
Absentia?
What a tragedy.
Yeah. Unlucky.
Unlucky isn't the word.
Unlucky Lindy.
No lie. Because, I mean, Eric, from your crime background, I mean, do you really believe that that guy was the murderer of Charles Lindbergh Jr.? I mean...
It doesn't really seem like that guy was the murderer. It seems like the murderer was far more disorganized. And when you kidnapping, it requires a substantial commitment and substantial planning. It seems like it was more of a spur of the moment kidnapping, and that they killed him to cover it up because they realized, you know, what are we going to do with him now?
Yeah, type I was going to say, know. Like, oh, but, yeah.
You know, very, you know, a very, very disorganized and disjointed type of kidnapping, and that guy didn't seem like he had what it take to pull it off. So it looked,
I mean,
like,
wouldn't it seem strange, but are kidnappings usually done by a single person? I mean, wouldn't you kind of need like a couple
usually,
people
to
pull it off?
Right. You usually true kidnappings are done by, you know, multiple individuals or collective criminality. If an individual is usually an abduction, that would be a spur of the moment. They take the person, they usually keep them for less than 14 hours or 24 hours, and, you know, we'll release the individual. You know, and that's usually if they find someone alone. So, yeah, true kidnappings are truly rare because of that, you know, but, you know, most people don't plan them out, and it ends up like that. So I don't believe that guy was the individual. I believe the guys, whoever did it, realized, you know, we're not going to be able to get away with this, killed the child and went about their business.
Okay, but he took the rap for it,
yes,
though.
Yes, absolutely.
And, in fact, in more than one way, he was electrocuted. Yeah, he really took the rap for it. Yeah, his son's nickname was Buster, which seems like kind of a interesting, all right. What year was aspirin invented by Charles Gerhardt?
1821.
That's a little early.
I'm going to say 1822.
Actually, that's just a little bit late.
Okay, 1850-something.
1850-something is right.
Way to go, Grizz Brizzly.
That's 53. It. 53? You said 53. That's it. 1853.
Okay.
So now that would have been in the pharmacopoeia then for the Civil War, at least.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not that it probably would have helped too much.
Along with unclean surgical tools.
Right. Yeah. Really, you just had your leg shot off. Would you like an aspirin? Yeah. It must have been like, oh, my God.
A couple weeks ago, we were actually making acetylsalicylic acid in the lab. And one of my students' lab reports told me in the introduction that aspirin is used to relive pain.
Relive instead of relieving.
I was like, you know, I'm just going to pop one of those and bring back some old trauma.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want to go back to that time I broke the bone in my foot. Absolutely. Okay. Wow. What was the title of the 1989 biography of cartoonist Charles Schulz?
Yeah, what was that?
Good Grief.
Yes, it was. Yeah. There
Wild
it is.
Stab.
Uh-huh. What movie had a character named Charles Wheeler?
It's a classic.
Very good, very a recent film. Jonathan Demme was the director. Tom Hanks, Denzel Washington.
Oh, that's Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was that film. And does anybody know which actor played him? Distinguished American stage as well as film actor.
No.
Jason Robards. He played the really nasty older attorney.
Oh, yeah.
Like, was so homophobic.
Yeah, it's so
no.
I see a T-shirt coming.
I know.
I do too. Okay.
Now that's a tricky one.
Well, somewhat.
Well, yeah, because he was kind of a minor character, right?
Right.
Overall,
well, he was a judge. Well, he was the business owner, wasn't he?
He was the head of the law firm.
Yeah, that,
and
yeah.
You see him in the court scene certainly, but in the beginning, he's like so welcoming of Tom Hanks's character, like because the guy's working 90 million hours a week and hooks up a big contract for them, and that was all fine and well. In the Little House on the Prairie series, how did Charles and Carolyn Ingalls die? That would be Half Pint's mom and dad.
Tragically, in a fire.
They got carjacked with a covered wagon.
<That's right.
laughs> I'm wondering whether
the wagon
was
a
bear involved. Hacker?
No.
Old age.
In one sense, yeah. Charles died of old age, and that what they thought might have been a heart condition that he needed.
They actually did. They do like did they go in the future to show how they? It ended?
Well, no, there's a whole series of books that she wrote.
Oh, in the book?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
not, I mean, you're,
it's
oh, you're
in a book, I don't know.
Oh, you're talking about the television series.
That's not like, okay.
Okay.
So I'm going bear for the other one.
No, this is the mom. This is
no,
it's going to
be a disease.
It was.
It
had
to be a disease.
She had the influenza, which I guess.
At the time.
Although, actually, aspirin would have relived that agony. Would it not have? I mean, you would think it would have been. Or...
I just don't remember. I was thinking of the show and not.
Well, but they did a number of little houses, so that they did from the first books, and then they moved to Maple Grove. And
it got pretty bad. I mean, I watched it when I was a kid, But now watching it now, it's kind of painful to watch it now because it's just too not my style.
It's like drinking a glass of sugar water.
Well, while we think about sweetness and light, let's take a break. Yeah.
It's an Ask the Professor.
Flashback.
1995.
From the Department of Theater and Performing Arts, Professor Arthur Beer.
Yeah, hi, Edwin.
You better adjust the dose there.
My gosh. Jeez. Right. And on Arthur's right, my left, from the Department of English, Professor Hugh Kulin.
Happy to be here.
Happy to have you here. How did the hunting go?
I was with Greg. It's the first time he's tried it out.
That's right. And I got two, he got zero.
That was, but aside from other people we were hunting with, how'd we do on the deer?
Oh. We hit a couple coming.
On the way back. On the way back. Yep. Really? Run, Bambi, run.
Kaboom.
Yeah.
Mother.
Your mother's not coming back anymore, Bambi.
She's in huge refrigerator.
And we're back with questions about Darwin and Lincoln. But during the break, we discovered that poor Eric was tortured by his parents and he was forced to watch Little House on the Prairie. But instead, he had a favorite show, which was?
Wild Kingdom.
Wild Kingdom. Mutual of Omaha.
Yeah.
Jim?
Jim, has that elephant run you down yet? Have you been able to extract those tiger teeth from your hip? Yeah, that poor bugger, honest to God. Okay. What was special about Charles Miller's sewing machine of the 1800s? It did something very significant that other machines did not do.
Self-threading?
Yeah.
Was it self-threading?
No.
Was it run by...
pedal?
Certain power?
No, it could create something that would probably be very important in clothing that probably took a great deal of time to do by hand.
Buttonholes.
Yeah, buttonhole. I was just going
to
say.
Yeah, I mean, think about that. If you had to cut and sew a buttonhole by hand, that would really...
If you could have just skipped right to Velcro.
I was going to say, that would not be fun, you know? I mean, think about buttonholing, especially pre-zipper era.
Button. You did one button there.
Yeah, because that would be a lot of buttons.
Yes,
that would be really bad. Which opera singer sang at Prince Charles and Lady Diana's wedding?
Pavarotti?
No, this is a female.
Sarah Brightman?
She's from Down Under.
Sarah Brightman.
Actually, she is from New Zealand.
Is there really a Sarah Brightman? Okay.
She wasn't old enough.
She's a Maori, actually.
But then I thought about that. That was probably about 15, 20 years ago.
She wouldn't be old enough.
She would be about...
Yeah, I was going to say she'd be about...
18?
Maybe.
Maybe 15.
Maybe that 15, probably.
She's been named a dame of the British Empire since this period of time. Yes.
We're heading towards 30 years. It's early 80s.
Yeah. It's Dame Akira Takanawa.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it is.
Yeah. No, I did not know.
Yeah. Sarah Brightman's that old.
She had a beautiful, absolutely gorgeous voice, and it was kind of cool that he gave the nod to, you know.
What was her nickname?
KT. No doubt. Bring it on. Okay. Which U.S. president was shot by Charles J. Gateau?
Garfield.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And isn't it kind of sad that Garfield, wasn't it more of an infection that really killed him than the bullet wound again?
Absolutely.
Too bad no aspirin so he could relive that pain there.
I think there was a lot of, one of the things that the court case did, as I understand it, it made a lot of legal moves towards developing what we think of today as the insanity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, insanity plea?
Well, but it started with Peel, though. Sir Robert Peel and McNaughton rule. Yeah. When he tried to kill Peel, McNaughton tried to kill Peel. Yeah, it started the real insanity plea.
And so for the British?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we adopted the Garfield case clarified it, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm sad to say, Charles, you were nuts, dude, okay? I mean... Pretty crazy. Or I mean, just even look at McKinley's assassin, mm-hmm. even though he was like an anarchist.
Pronounce it for me.
I was going to say Leon DeCarlo.
Leon, the crazy man.
Yeah, I know. I think everybody mangled that name in history classes. It was,
you know, when I read Murdering
name.
McKinley a few years ago, one of the things I liked is he finally gave me the pronunciation, but then I forgot how it's pronounced.
Yeah, I know. But that's such an interesting case.
Many of the individuals from the late 70s and early 80s that committed those notorious crimes are up for parole. One of the individuals from before that, perhaps one of the first real serial killers that we had in the U.S. was Chicago. It's actually a college student named William Herons, who his sentence will be his entire sentence will be completed. He
has to be released.
Well,
then.
Yeah, that's what he's arguing, that he's a changed man. You know, and
he's going to run for the governorship of Illinois now.
Well, he's in Illinois. He'll fit right in.
I'm
so.
Just saying, he can just go down to Governor's Island down there at the state pen and hook it up. Our last Charles question: did Charles Dickens, the great British author, ever meet with Queen Victoria?
As opposed to the other great Charles Dickens?
As according to Charles Darwin, did he ever?
I'm guessing yes.
Sure, they had tea once.
Actually, they did meet in 1870, 3 months before Dickens died. They actually had a meeting. Hmm. And the Queen presented him with her own book, which was The Queen's Highland Travels. So she gave him a copy of that.
Is it a pop-up book?
She wishes. It is one of the most boring books in history. It really is.
It kind of feels like, you know, Mr. Dickens, I have a script.
You think you could produce it?
He's on his deathbed there.
Exactly.
Yeah, she talked about how there were parts of her diary entries from her time at Balmoral Castle.
This probably explains why he died before completing the mystery of Edmund Bruce.
Gotta finish that. Okay.
Oh, I thought you were heading, a couple questions ago, given the context, I thought you were heading towards Charlie Manson or something.
Oh, well.
He's another one that's up.
I'm
guessing
as
he has that swastika etched into his forehead,
he doesn't want to get out.
They're going to have trouble getting
He doesn't want to get out, honestly.
He'll get killed
as soon as he gets out. There are probably 15, 20 groups lined up to take him out. But he'll be up for parole soon if he's not up already.
Really?
Yes. Based on the nature of the sentences that they received at that time, you figure a typical life sentence is 20 years. That's life. Unless you get life without
parole.
And if you get, you get two or three life sentences, or if they run concurrently, then that's still just 20 years. But a year in jail is only 10 months.
Okay, well, what
so if you get a 40-year sentence, it's only 10 months. And then you count good time and... So, many of these individuals are either now or will be up for parole. You remember the individual that they just had who was down in Texas who was up. He was a serial killer here. His name just slipped my mind. He was actually from one of the jurisdictions that I policed at. He killed like four ladies here, one in Ferndale in the 70s, and he was never convicted of it. And they convicted him of two murders down in Texas and gave him a life sentence, and he served it, and he was going to be released. He didn't want to be released. And so he told the people that when they were getting ready to release him, if you release me, the day I get out, I'm going to go kill somebody.
Oh, Mary, save us.
And they were like, well, we have to release you. And so they...
We have to release you?
So they, we charged him here in the state of Michigan, and he received, additional life sentences for those murders here in Michigan, in which he pled no
contest
to.
Both Dan and I are just sitting here like,
what? Pled no contest to. But if he wouldn't have made that comment, then he would have been walking free. They would have pushed him out the front door of the jail.
Okay, so they can actually say, I don't want to get out.
No. You have to be released.
Oh, you
but
have
if
to
he wouldn't have, his comment made the news. Right. It brought attention to the fact that he was being released there. People remembered him here. Say, hey, isn't that the guy we could never convict here for these crimes? And so then they were able to bring him up here, convict him for those crimes. He pled no contest to it, and he's happily in jail.
Okay, well, if he was happy, that's important. We'll have to stop there. But let me thank our panelists, Professor Mayo.
Up, Chuck.
Okay, Professor Maggio.
What? Stoltis.
Stoltis. Professor Barnes.
Once again, Six Semper Tyrannis.
Indeed. And Professor Finkenbein.
Come spend a fun-filled week with Lincoln this July.
There we go. Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Communication Studies Radio Department here at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced, technically directed, witnessed, and salvaged week after week by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. So until next week, I'm your host, Kathy Bush. Let's go, Detroit Titans!